I move we approve the agenda.
Thank you.
I will second. That was Beth.
Thank you so much. Okay, so all those in favor in the room, just say aye.
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 And online, Bert?
Aye.
Ellard?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carried.
Item number 3 is the approval of the minutes from the February 9th meeting.
I'll move we approve.
Okay, I got Tisa, and then I think that was Pamela. Okay, all those in favor in the room?
Aye.
Online, Bert?
Aye.
Ellard?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carried.
All right. Public comments?
None.
So that will lead us to our superintendent's report.
Very good. Kathleen, you're up. You're muted.
The next thing that's going to happen with the online environment is they're going to figure out when you start talking, it'll turn it on, maybe.
Yeah, but then they're going to hear you shushing the dog. That's what I'm doing.
That's right. And that wouldn't necessarily be good because if you're yelling at your kid, at home, you don't want the whole place to know.
That is definitely the tamest thing that we can find. It only gets worse from there.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it's been a very interesting month, a couple months. I think it's been a couple months since you guys met. But we have closed out school years. I think the first year we've ended in May. And so it has been like a speeding train. The school year ended so fast that there was so much to do to get ready for the end of the school year. And then we got this one-time money from the state for extended learning opportunities. And so we were able to do summer school and after-school learning programs and different things with this money. And it's quite a bit of money, actually. I think overall, network-wide, we have like $6 or $7 million of the ELO funds. And so we have launched immediately after school. It was out the next week we started summer school. So keeping in mind, we didn't open the doors for many of our centers until March 22nd around March 22nd for school. But even when we opened the doors, it was limited capacity. So in some cases, the kids only got one day a week of school. It's according to the case by case, according to the size of the classrooms and whether they could get 6-foot distancing and all of that stuff. So only Citrus, Santa Ana, Citrus Springs, and Vista were open before March. Actually, Rancho Cucamonga opened early. They opened at the beginning of March. So Santa Ana and Vista were first. Rancho Cucamonga was third. And Otay was a little on the end, I think. Did they open March 22nd? I don't know. They might have opened the week after. But they might have opened the week after Easter at Otay because Chula Vista was having a lot of cases at that time, and Chula Vista Unified was closed and all of that. Okay. So anyway, but River Springs, all the River Springs programs opened in March 22nd. So it's been, they only had a very short amount of time, and most of them have only had a very short amount of contact in the classroom. So the summer school gave us an opportunity to, first of all, by the time summer school rolled around, the situation was vastly improved with COVID, so we could decrease physical distancing to 3 to 4 feet. So that gave us the ability to have like 20 kids in a class, which is fantastic. Then we were able to offer full days. So we decided that a lot of people didn't want to do five full days for summer school. So we're doing three full days, And so for the homeschoolers, they're being offered 2 weeks of, so 2 weeks at a camp, 3 days a week. So they're with the same group for 6 days over 2 weeks. And then we're offering two of those. The first 2 weeks of June and the second 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of June. And then for academy programs, we're offering a month, 4 weeks of 3 days a week. And we had a lot of interest. Amy just ran those numbers. She just, in some chat, she mentioned, I think Vista has 49% or something of the children attending, or 40, in the 40s. And so it's gotten good participation. So we're excited about it. And I think overall, we think a little bumpy start here and there because of the fact that we had to end school, and then the next week open summer school. And summer school is not a thing we do. We haven't done it in years.
Overall in the network, about 23% of the students are attending. That's good with Vista being the highest percentage. Yeah, mid-40s, I want to say Kathleen. That was so 3 hours ago.
I know, gosh.
So I've had so many meetings since then. But yeah, overall good, because also what we found is a lot of students who needed the extended learning did take us up on the opportunity. So overall a good thing for those kids.
Yeah,
So,
since we haven't, and maybe I'm just out of it, and I think you said this just a second ago, that we haven't done summer school so how did you staff that? I don't understand. My guess is that, and this is going to come out harsh, and I apologize, but as a general statement, teachers are like, this isn't part of my contract, you have to pay me. Is that coming out of the $7 million or
yep.
more?
Okay. That's the majority of the $7 million.
Okay.
So, not this. So, we're able to do summer school this year and next year. And we can do after-school learning programs during the school year, all for that $7 million.
Okay. Cool.
But you're 100% right. We were worried, actually. I was, I've been reading the news, and I've been reading the room to the extent that I can on the Zoom with our staff, and feeling like people are a little overwhelmed by everything these days. And I really didn't think we would get enough staff to, really staff a big summer school program. But we did. We had double the amount of teachers. Double the amount of teachers wanted to do it than we needed. So it was great. And they got paid their daily rate for the days, plus they got a couple of planning days and 15% over that. So we did incentivize a little bit because people, it is an extra duty. It's not part of their 185-day, deal. So, but it's an extra pay, and a lot of our teachers really appreciate the extra money. And then we also were able to offer, with the same funding, we're able to offer some extra days of planning in August before school starts. So right now, our schedule has 175 days of school plus 10 days of professional development. And maybe, three or four of those days are before school starts. Maybe 5 days are before school starts. And then we have a couple of days, or three days during the school year or something, and then one at the end of the year. Amy does that whole schedule, so she knows, but it doesn't matter. But the point is, it's never enough days, let's just say that. Teachers can't do all their planning and organizing and learning in 10 days a year for the entire 175 days. So the opportunity to provide a few more paid days for the teachers to do planning and learn a little and work with their teams, I think that was fantastic to be able to offer that. So we're offering that in August. So August is going to be very busy We also, because of the growth in the organization, we're looking at growing by at least 1,500 students network-wide. So that means that we're going to be bringing on an additional 100 employees, and plus we have to bring on the employees that we have to replace people that leave. And we always have, you know, 50 to 75 people leave every year. You know, we have 1,100 employees, and so, you know, there is a turnover of about 15%. And people move to Idaho. It seems like everybody moved to Idaho. No, all of California will be in Idaho.
So Kathleen, my friend from his house in Orange County moved to Idaho, moved back 6 months later with $400,000 in his pocket from the house in Idaho, not in Orange County.
Wow.
In 6 months.
That's crazy.
Did he keep the house in Orange County or had he sold it?
He's an idiot. He doesn't realize that he's having to like take that money and then put it into an overinflated property down here, but which is what he did. Yeah. But
I mean, still felt good.
Yeah.
Well, he was in the house in Orange County, and that, So anyway, so that's our situation. So we're going to end up looking at an Aloha Welcome Week. In the first week in August, of maybe 250 people. And so that is the biggest we've ever had. And it's exciting, but it's also a tremendous amount of work for staff right now. So I'm not going on a big vacation this summer or anything. I think a lot of people are feeling the same way, that we try to really encourage people to take their vacation in the summer, and we're still going to allow for that, of course, but we also have to ensure that we can get that support that we might need for all this onboarding of new staff. And
so, Kathleen, does that mean that we think
in every department?
Does that mean you think that we're going to be above 10,000 students?
Yes.
That's amazing.
A little over, at our peak, we're about 11,000. We're looking to be close to 13.
When? Like next year?
So
based on that, I'm looking at 8,400, so 13 is like a 70% growth.
So right now, let me walk you through it. So projected first day of enrollment without what we're adding is a little over 10,000. And then, we'll be a little under 12,000. Sorry about that. And we had, as a little update to you guys, report you have in the packet is a part of the story, and I apologize for that. Natalie and I will rectify that. Now that we do lottery, we actually have wait lists, not pending lists, so that's why the pending lists are zero. It's actually different legally. So we did hold the lottery 2 months ago, and we had 5,887 students network-wide in the lottery.
Oh, wow.
Along with 767 kids that wanted to transfer programs, which is very typical. And we have offered lottery spots already to the students who are infilling classrooms. And then as far as this extra growth is concerned that Kathleen's talking about, we're going to start offering next week for those spots because it looks like we will get paid for growth. So it is all looking very good. And first time ever in Springs history, we have true lottery, because every single program and every single charter was considered full because of the whole term list. And so the lottery had to kick in. So we did 5,887 individual cards that we pulled. And my team did an awesome job, because my husband got COVID in the middle of it. So they took over and did a fantastic job. But needless to say, Tim, we're going to be by far the biggest we have ever been as a network. And we only have about 4 programs out there that aren't going to be considered full, which
Kathleen's team, Kathleen and her team will work on marketing for those programs.
Yeah, because
we need to be in the coming spring.
Every single solitary program has to be full with a wait list. Come on, people. So anyway, we're excited about all that. There's a lot going on. In addition to that,
we need like
extended learning opportunity money, which has a deadline to be set for the end of August. We also have federal money, ESSER 2 and ESSER 3 money that comes from the federal government, and that's even more money. And that has 3 years to be spent. So I think network wide, it's probably $20 million. I know for River alone, it's $14 million. So,
Kathleen, Tisa had a question for you a minute ago.
I know we had taken on about 1,000 students we didn't get paid for. Did they ever do anything to rectify that?
Okay, so I'll shift into legal and legislative. So legal, we are in the midst of a lawsuit with the state of California. We are one of the lead plaintiffs on the case. There are three schools that are in this, that are together. Springs, specifically River Springs and Empire Springs, and Classical Academies, and the Learning Choice Academy in San Diego. All of us experienced growth that we did not get paid for, and all of us feel that it's unconstitutional. And when I mean unconstitutional, I'm talking about the California Constitution. I'm talking about, like, the fact that it's never been done like this before, ever, and it is wrong, and it is against it is unconstitutional. And so, and how dare they do this? And if you let something like this go, we end up maybe, you know, giving away our rights in the future. And if we aren't going to fight back, the little guys aren't going to fight back. You know, they can't. If you have 250 students, are you going to want to launch a lawsuit against the state of California? So, anyway. So that's what we're doing, and so far it's gone very well for us, because every single time we file the injunction, you know, this or that or whatever, and I can't even tell you what all the things are, but it's gone our way. And but I mean, you know, it's a long process, and will we ever see the money? I don't know, but has it maybe put a pause in the state doing this again? I hope so. Because it's definitely, it's not like the judge just said each time, well, you know, we're throwing this out because there's no merit to the case. They said, yeah, you're right, this is a problem. You know, I mean, they think it's a problem. So they've taken it. As a matter of fact, they scheduled for this next hearing that we have that's coming up in July. They normally schedule an hour, they schedule 2 hours for ours.
So, and what can you tell them about the class action? And how it became, how we got other people involved.
So this particular case, because it's a class, it has become certified. That was one of the things that we had to ask the judge to allow us to certify as a class action suit. Because we have about 100, there's 150 non-classroom-based charters across the state of California, and so all of them could be part of this class action suit. And so not all of them are impacted, not all of them took extra students and all this, but it doesn't matter because it's their right to take these extra students and get paid for them. It's really a civil rights issue, right? Okay. Because ultimately, it means that they're saying that some students are worth zero and some students are worth full funding. And especially if parents have the audacity to leave a school district to come to a charter school, then they're really not worth any funding. So,
anyway, that's what. So basically, no big news to report other than so far so good on the lawsuit. And then the second thing I wanted to talk about was the legislative politics of charter school land. As you know, unless you haven't been on Facebook or...
Hey, Kathleen, can you pause for 1 second? Because Tim wanted to follow up with what you were talking about.
Sorry, go ahead.
On the lawsuit, they're still paying for that student, right? They're just paying the former district from which they came from. So it's not that they're saying the student's not worth the money. They're saying we don't want to pay you the money specifically,
right?
Limiting.
They're gonna pay the LA Unified to not serve that child.
Right. They're going to enrich one organization at consequence of another organization.
Right. Right.
Okay,
swell. Let me just say, whenever I get into an argument, I get into these arguments quite often when I'm out and about. Of course, hasn't been lately, but now it's been on social media, which is the worst, right? But when I get into arguments with people and they're like, well, I don't like charter schools because if they take money from the public school, that is the rallying cry. That is what they have been taught by CTA. They have been taught that this is the soundbite. Charter schools take money from the public schools, as if charter schools aren't public schools.
Yeah,
number one, number two,
as if
we're pampering the public schools. But the thing is, I say, how is that possible? What do you mean by taking money from the public schools? Because they don't have to educate the child anymore. And 93% of the cost is in educating that child. If the district allegedly only spends 7-8% for, indirect costs or like overhead, right? So, and they can't explain it because they haven't been given any more information. They've just been given that fight over and over again. And they don't really know how we take money from the public schools. So it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that. You can go on to the legislation.
Right. So anyway, so AB 1316, it's in the same sort of theme, in the same vein. AB 1316 is 84 pages of legislation that was introduced, and its main goal of it is to squash non-classroom-based charter schools, because basically what they say is, if you, according to the number of days of in the classroom education you provide, that impacts how much your funding is. So if you provide 4 days a week of in-classroom education, you get 100% funding. If you provide 3 days, you get 90% funding. 2 days, 80% funding, whatever. It's very complicated, a little sliding scale, but it basically, if you don't provide a classroom education at all during the week for your student, that child is funded at 70%, which, by the way, no school I know that's doing a good job with children can manage at 70% funding.
Did they cut the funding for the last year when no one offered classrooms?
No, they didn't.
Right.
Cut the funding. In fact,
at least for consistent.
An article in EdWeek, which is the, CTA basically sponsored paper, which said that the school districts are getting rid of distance learning because it's too expensive. Well, yeah, I mean, if you do it well, distance learning is expensive, and you need more staff, so, but that's not, the other thing to note is that when school districts get facilities, they're getting those facilities not in their regular apportionment. They're getting those facilities with bond money and facility grant money. And they are not spending their general fund on their facilities. So
we are. We do.
So anyway, so that's a number one bad thing about AB 1316. There's a few other bad things. One is they would get rid of our ability to serve contiguous counties. It would get rid of our ability to offer multiple tracks of, you know, track A, track B, track C, which we don't do, but we don't serve that many students in contiguous counties, so, I mean, it wouldn't be an existential threat to us. It would impact us, though. What else? They have more requirements for independent study accountability. One of the things that it wanted us all to do is public bidding process for facility, you know, modifications and things, which everybody, see the average person would think that a public bidding process is, oh, that's easy to do. You know, everybody should get three bids and whatever. Well, that's not what public bidding is. Public bidding is you gotta, you know, have public hearing, post in the newspaper, make sure that the person is using all union scale people for every part of the job. I mean, it adds a year to every single project just to get to the point where you can book the contractor. So getting three bids, that's a normal operating procedure, but yeah, this isn't that. So anyway, all these things are, most of them are not deal breakers except the 70% funding.
And then also, Kathleen, right, the part where the student and the teacher have to have contact every day, every week, every whatever?
All right. Well, that language looks like it's being written into the trailer bill, but maybe not as specifically. They want the student, one of the things that AB 1316 said that's not being written into the trailer bill is that they want children to track, or parents to track what the child does every hour of the school day. And the school day is, well, 8 to 4, you know, or whatever, 8 to 3, during the regular 175 days. It's like, okay, that just, you know, it's just one of those things where you're forcing people to lie. Nobody's gonna run school just like as if they were going to the local school, you know, nobody.
You don't even take a lot of time when you have two kids. It doesn't take you as long to say sit. You know? And they're your kids, so if you're a good parent, they sit. And, you know, you're not trying to go out to recess, you're not trying to do all this stuff. I mean, you can easily do
a whole school day.
Exactly.
If they're really motivated.
Are we making teachers in a traditional setting, are we going to make them have to make an account for every time they have to discipline every single different child? Bring the whole class back in.
Right. How many minutes? If you did a study in a regular class, how many minutes were on task? It would be probably less than 4 hours. It would be really sad for me to hear that news, but especially from what I'm hearing from the summer school, now the kindergartners are in summer school, they're in all day, and they have been at home with mom, you know, all year, right? And the teacher was like, we're not getting any academics done this summer, I just want you to know. I'm like, just getting walked, the teacher had to walk to the playground, the teacher had to ride, you know, slide down slide, the teacher had to walk back. I'm like, that's school, the kinder. I mean, that's important. So, anyway, so what's good about this is that Newsom, you know, has been, there's a recall effort, which has caused Newsom to think twice about what he signs, what bills he signs. And since there was so much action on AB 1316 and so many people calling to complain about it, he has convinced the author, they made a deal, and the author has tabled, or what they call, put the bill in the inactive file for the rest of this year, the calendar year, and so that's off the table, so we get a little reprieve. The word on the street is that he won't take it out of the inactive file next year either, because Newsom wants to get reelected. And so, you know, he doesn't want to sign it next year either. So that might give us a year and a half. And then, meanwhile, in exchange for that, the author of the of AB 1316 was given three more years of a moratorium on new non-classroom based charters. So nobody can open new non-classroom based charters for 3 years. That's going to be put into the trailer bill. And it just appears to me, this is why I think like our political system is broken, because they can just slip things in the back door in this trailer bill and basically get it all approved in one fell swoop, and that, you know, it doesn't have the official process of vetting like all these bills have, you know. So I don't understand how that could be allowed all the time, and is this the way they always do things?
Kathleen, have you been paying attention to the news and how there's been lots and lots of information about UFOs coming out in the news in like the last 2 months? Like, it's been all over the news about, particularly with the federal government and fighter pilots in the Navy and the Air Force spotting these really crazy devices flying through the sky. And this information became declassified because President Trump in 2020 signed a bill for the COVID relief and made them declassify that information in the COVID relief bill, and that's why this information came out in May.
Wow.
So there's all this, like that is standard operating procedures for government. Like, oh, you want this? Then you got to take my pork in order to for me to take whatever it is that you want me to eat. Like, if they did every bill on its merit one by one, they would get a lot less done, but it would be a lot more honest, and we would be able to see, like, clearly, not have to look through 2,000 pages.
What would be the most honest is if nobody, there was no campaign spending. You know, everybody got free TV time of a certain amount and whatever, and or exactly the same, you know, amount of, and then you elected the right person. They were not beholden to any lobby groups or any special interest groups or any big businesses. Because it's just as bad on both sides. They're all like completely reliant upon these people to fund their campaigns, and they're lifetime politicians. So they cannot vote their conscience because they've got people they have to answer to. So it's
Kathleen, it's even worse. It's even worse than that. Like, the Republicans and Democrats on TV are like polar opposites and hate each other. The Republicans and Democrats in real life are right next to each other. The difference between these two people is very, very small. But they just act like they hate each other for this stupid political theater that we have to like endure. Like, how else do you explain Donald Trump and like Joe Biden as the two best people for president last year? Like,
how did that
30 million people.
That's an excellent question. So anyway, but so all is good right now. I mean, we are keeping an eye on the trailer bill. The trailer bill is where any changes are going to happen, and the changes are mostly going to impact. The changes are mostly going to impact our record keeping, and that is a big pain. It's really Amy's job mostly. So she's got, you know, so really it's not my problem, and it's all right, it's fine. You know, I'm saying, no, I mean, we're going to try to keep it as a way of the parents, students, and teachers as we can, but, you know, we only can do so much, and the problem is we have a very accountable system. We do a lot of infrastructure and support of our homeschoolers and our keys and our all venture program and all these different programs. But we're not reporting this in an official way all the time that a teacher talks to a student and or their parent. We're not keeping track of each and every contact, right? Now we will start to, if this comes into law, we're going to have to start to track every single thing because it's going to be audited. And so then it becomes this, they're turning us into a compliance-oriented organization instead of a results-oriented organization. And
but that's what that's what the other bureaucracies are, right? So that, when you're not doing that, they don't have control over you, so they want to push you into that bucket.
Right.
But yet the results are how we get renewed. So
can I ask a question about, like, last year?
It's beholden to the compliance and to the results. It's, you know, it's both ends.
So
yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Last year, I mean, I'm hearing lots and lots of reports about the effects of the 2020-2021 school year. Like, have we, like, looked at performance of students and seen, like, were A students, are they B students now, or are they still A students, like, or is there a massive drop-off? Because I'm hearing all kinds of crazy reports all over the place, and so I realize it's only been 2 weeks. But have we already started looking at that, or do we have some sense of that?
Yes, we have been looking at that all along the way. One of the benefits of having the same diagnostic assessment, which is iReady, is that we can really compare this year's results to previous years, because we've had that system for 7 or 8 years now, and we have not noticed a decline in general overall, except high school. High school has declined, but K to 8, we haven't noticed a decline in English language arts. As a matter of fact, in many programs, they're better in English language arts than previous. I mean, they're doing a little better. In math, there is a slight decline, but it's very, I don't know if it's statistically significant. It's a couple percentage points. But high school is a problem. We have a lot of high school students who have not earned their full credits last year, even though we drastically modified the requirements, modified meaning reduced the requirements. I know I'm not supposed to say that, but like we boiled it down to the most important points and made them, you know, accountable to that.
Right. Well, what we really did is their state minimum requirements, and we layer on top of that. And so in cases of emergency, which, you know, this certainly is the pandemic, we are allowed to go back down to the state minimum requirements. So just to kind of,
We're not breaking the law, so you guys don't have to worry. But the point is, we do have I think we have 1,500 high schoolers, and I think I had some news. The number that sticks out of my head is like 340 students who didn't make the adequate growth this school year. They didn't make expected units. They didn't earn expected units. That doesn't mean they were completely off the grid. It just means they didn't complete their 60 credits in the year like they expected. Yeah.
What's a normal? You said 340 out of 1,500. What's a normal year? Is that like 120, 150, 300? I don't know. I don't have a frame of reference.
It would be less. Yeah, maybe 100, 150. It might be double the amount of students that than usual didn't make expected growth. And we're definitely going to have a drop in our graduation rate. Like last year, our graduation rate was 90%. This year, we think it'll be like 75, something like that. I don't know. I'm guessing at the moment because
no, that's accurate. That's what we're seeing. But we'll catch up with the kids continuing with school. So, and not to get too deep in the weeds, but if they don't graduate in 4 years, our graduation rate will fall. But if they graduate near 5, they'll get added back in the following year. So hopefully they'll continue and finish. But Kathleen's right, our graduation rate is going to decrease, and our dropout rate is going to increase. With everything we've done to try to contact these kids and build relationships and do everything we can to modify curriculum and all that, there's still some that this was just too much for them.
Got it. I've asked some questions. Thanks.
Any other questions about my report? I think I've covered so much going on. So
I was curious about graduation as well. So for those students who weren't able to, are they turning into like a fifth year senior, or were they able to do summer school to see if they could graduate?
We have about 20 that are floating right now. I'm calling them our floating seniors, for lack of a better word. So we do have a pretty big group. I don't have a number off the top of my head, but I'm just looking at seniors who are doing this extended learning opportunity and finishing up those credits from last year. So that will be amazing. We do have some who are going to be fifth-year seniors who have already said they're going to return. And then we do have a couple handfuls, so it ended up being okay, who are floating, who they are contacting. Guidance is actually working with them, contacting them, saying, hey, you know, what's your plan? What are you going to do? Because they haven't necessarily disappeared, but they didn't sign up for summer school. They said they're not coming back, but they also didn't finish their units, so we need to figure out what they're doing. But overall, it's been a very good job of keeping track of everyone, particularly, obviously, in this particular conversation, the seniors, because, you know, we want them to graduate and move on with life and go be successful, of course. But we can't give it away, you know, on a flight
right.
If they don't do the work. And a lot of them are just feeling, you know, real depressed about the, you know, they, you know, teenagers are in general social animals. They want to, I mean, life is not working out the way they planned, and they don't have a lot of coping mechanisms in the same way adults have. I don't know. The whole thing has been, it's been pretty hard on some contingents of students. So anyway, we're looking to figure out ways to get the kids back in. Our theme next year for the year is going to be play, and looking at social emotional learning through the lens of like play, because I don't think a lot of people think social emotional learning is like holding hands and singing Kumbaya or something, and you know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about like actual, you know, learning, you know, how to take turns, how to be friends, how to win, how to lose, you know, negotiate, and all of these things that happen when you're playing games with your friends, when you're, you know, in a social situation. So we have to provide time in the classroom for the kids to actually do those things that they missed out on, because we will pay the price. If we just try to hit the ground running with academics only when the kids come back in, it'll backfire on us majorly. This is the best way to improve our overall academic results is to focus on the relationships when we come back. And a lot of that will be through play, gamifying lessons, you know, discussions, you know, that kind of thing. So we're excited about that. Our theme is Back to the Future, and we're saying getting back is only the beginning. That's the tagline. Getting back is only the beginning.
And we are planning on doing Pachanga in person, and that is moving forward, and it's going to be excellent. We are all going to stay in one room instead of doing breakout sessions, because it makes people uncomfortable to sit next to you and sit next to you. So, but we're going to do a spring sport thing. We're going to make sashes. We have all sorts of fun play activities together. And then the board meeting is, the board dinner is the Wednesday night before. And if you'd like to, it's a prom theme. So you can dress up in your favorite 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
It's enchantment under the sea, just like the
Back to the
Future.
Back to the Future.
Yeah. Prom.
Yeah.
Back to the Future 1.
So you have Marvin Berry singing there?
From the Chuck Berry.
Chuck's brother.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a theme from board dinner all the way through. So you guys will be the Wednesday night board dinner, which you'll get an awesome invite to, of course. And then all day Thursday is all staff day, everyone.
And then Friday is education only, so you guys will get your invite and be the Wednesday night board dinner from Natalie, and then all day first if you want to stay for staff day and congo with me and see the costume contest. And of course, Vivian and Kathleen will be speaking, and we will have an awesome keynote speaker. So we're going to be really happy to be back together and break it up a little bit more. Rather than, since we can't move rooms and stuff, we're putting in some very intentional breaks and table-type things and stuff like that, so that it's not, you know, sitting there listening for 8 hours, because nobody's going to, nobody likes that plan. So.
Perfect. Any other questions on the superintendent's report?
Are we going to have Brown Act training one of those days?
So we will definitely have Brown Act training sometime during the year. I don't know yet if we're going to do it at Pechanga or if it'll just be in like we did this school year. We just incorporated it into one of your meetings. That made it a little less painful, I felt, because it kind of was just in your packet and we kind of just said all the things and moved on. So, you know, maybe we'll try to do that. So, but we definitely have to do it at some point.
I right. Definitely have to do it, but for some of you, you could give the
you could teach it. That was yes. 100%.
Gotta check the box so Natalie doesn't go to board jail.
That's right. Tanya said she'd bail me out. I'm trusting if that ever happens. I've got her on speed dial. Yes.
All right, item six, financial update for Springs.
Thanks, Kathleen. Amy,
thank
that's
you.
Kathleen,
you. Appreciate it. It was nice
to meet you. Okay, everyone, so the next two items are mine. The financial update is pretty easy. Basically, I had told you guys at the beginning of the year and then actually throughout the year that we were taking in a lot less money from the schools because everything was virtual, and we were trying to save some money in this pretty tough year. We did that. Your actuals for the end of the year will turn out just fine. As you remember, I am technically your CPO, or whatever it's called, for segregation of duties. Tanya is your volunteer bookkeeper, and this all runs through QuickBooks. So everything looks good as far as the financial update is concerned, and when we talk about the next item, we'll talk about things going a little bit more back to normal. So.
This was just, yeah, this is just information unless somebody had questions or something.
All right. Any questions? Beth? All right, we're moving on. Item number seven, the approval of the 2021-2022 budget.
So this one is an action item. I'll take a motion.
All right. I move we approve the budget.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay.
Okay, excellent. So I know this was in your packet, so just a few things I want to point out to you guys. What we're at is we have an MOU or Memorandum of Understanding with charters to charge up to $80 per ABA. It looks like right now, according to this budget, the way I work this budget is actually opposite of what I typically do. I work the expenses and then go backwards to see how much we have to charge to get revenue. This is set at $45 per ABA based on projected revenue with what. So this is assuming that we are going to be able to bill the schools, which for all intents and purposes, we are expecting to do that. This is obviously more similar to the non-pandemic budget. So you can see in there one thing that is of note, which is under the budget summary, is you'll see my reserves to spend down of $250,000. So you guys don't need a reserve because you're a full statutory 501c3 and not a charter school that has to have a 3% reserve. You guys still have money in the bank left over from last year. That's how we can keep it down to $45 per ADA. We're going to go ahead and spend that down, roll that over, and you guys will see that on there so that we can get you guys back to closer to zero in reserves, because, of course, you guys still really... I mean, not to zero, but, you know, a couple $1,000 in there for a little cushion. So the other thing I want to point out to you all is as you move down, everything is pretty on par with where we used to be, as far as Pechanga being your biggest expense and you guys taking on all the staff development expenditures that you can. And then also, obviously, recognition and gifts for meetings,
And then any professional services such as insurance, I got the bill, and so it was like $5,732, so that's $1,510, so on and so forth. So overall, everything looks pretty good for the year, and so I want to make sure you all are good and don't have any questions as far as budget is concerned. No? Okay, one thing we did talk yesterday, which does have to do with spring thing, is the picnic. We are finding that the people, about 500 people at the picnic, we are only getting about 150 employees and their families. So that's a very small percentage since we have about 1,200 employees. So senior staff is discussing what we can do for kind of like a spring fling, maybe the first week of May situation to get more employees involved. So I just want to let you guys know that. So if you hear some spring fling thing, of course, we'll be invited to it. We are talking about something other than picnic. And that is something that comes through the spring thing. So I want to make sure you're aware if you hear something about that. It'll be a spring staff appreciation. It may not be a picnic, but in your budget it says picnic. But that's because we have this discussion after I make the budget. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Any questions? Okay. Those in favor in the room?
Aye.
Online, Bert?
Aye.
Ellard?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carried.
Okay, you guys are done with my items. I think Natalie can take over.
Yep, I got it.
Thanks, Amy.
Good night, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Amy. Great job.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye, Amy.
Bye.
Yes. So in terms of vacancies on your boards, which are all of our boards except for River, as you know, we have one person who is terming out, and that is on Citrus Springs. Sarah Schlatter served two full terms, so she's, you know, not eligible to renew her term. We opened up the application about 3-4 weeks ago, and in terms of Citrus applicants, so I also have vacancies on River, but you guys don't seat for River. In terms of responses for Citrus specifically, you had 3 applicants. I can email those applications to you. I also have them printed for those in the room for you to review. I need to know from you what you'd like to do. You certainly can take these 3 and look at them and then get back to me, or you can tell me to open it up again, or whatever you want us to do. In terms of the people who applied, 2 of them are known to us. 1, I don't know who it is. One that is known to us is Chuck Vela. He has served on River successfully for 6 years, and he termed out. His wife, Tracy, you all know. She is on...
River?
Nope, she is on Empire. So if you selected him, he'd be on Citrus. There's no, you know, overlap there. The other person who is known to us is Ivo Cowett's wife.
Oh.
So Ivo is also on Empire. Again, this would be for Citrus. She also has applied to be on River, so she'd like to interview for that one as well. The other candidate, I don't know who it is. Never heard of her.
Natalie, can you remind me if Chuck had time in between, like when did he term out?
He just termed out of River just now, this last month.
Just now,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep. Very supportive board member.
How many applicants did River get?
I think total I had 18 or 19.
And they need to fill?
2. They have to fill 2 positions.
So we could...
Yes, you could review. I could send all of those to you, and you could review those as well if you'd like, even though they didn't...
Can we streamline it and have them give us their top 5?
So River has not, yeah, River has not yet met, so they haven't, they're in the same boat as you all. They haven't, the application window closed yesterday, so they haven't yet reviewed theirs. They haven't given me, you know, top 5 or whatever it is that they want to do. So I just wanted to give you an update, and again, I will happily give you the applications of the 3 who have applied. I also did not put in this packet your calendar. just haven't gotten there yet, but also we will have to decide what we want to do in terms of interviewing. So I figured we could just kind of have a conversation about dates that are available, and we obviously will be having a meeting at some point to do those interviews so we can establish a calendar for the year then.
I would say we need to meet in July because we want them seated before the Pachanga.
If possible, I would agree with that.
I like the number 3. That feels really small.
Uh-huh.
And this is going to come out wrong because I don't know work, but we have too many spouses. Like, I mean, I know we want to have people that are supportive and all of that, but I don't know. I think we have this conversation every time. It just feels a little too. It just feels a little too to me. So, and my guess is that none of those people are in Orange County.
The one that I don't know, according to,
right,
yes, according,
two are, right?
Yes, our two are not.
Yeah.
Riverside and Temecula.
Yeah.
This one who I don't know, I recognize the phone number as being Orange County. It's 714. Help me. She's in Hacienda Heights.
Yeah, that's really borderline LA.
Okay.
Like, you're pushing out.
Yeah. Did she have a student in Orange County?
Let me see. She does not have a student with us.
She's not related to any previous person.
Yeah.
She wanted to, like, talk to this person about, like, how you found this and why you're here.
Right.
That's a weird thing. I mean,
Did she have references?
One of her references is Kathy Anger, who is a employee of ours, an ES of ours.
Got to figure out the math. That's boring.
Natalie, can you remind me when we are talking about applicants, is that closed session or is it still recorded?
We are on a live line that's being recorded at the moment. We can do interviews. I have received conflicting information, to be honest with you. Sometimes I have been in meetings where interviews were held in public session on a recorded line, and we also have done interviews that was told was okay to do it in closed session. So I could confirm, but I've received information both ways.
I would assume that with the amount of identity issues that we have these days, that closed session to some extent might be appropriate.
No, I think it would be up to the interviewee.
So,
or which they want.
Yeah.
People to know.
So, again, I have seen it both ways. Our application, so to apply for a public position, this is, it's right on the application that their entire application, including their address and everything, is public record. They have, I mean, their signature, which is basically just putting the date on the electronic form, acknowledges that this is, anything they put in here is public information. I have been in public interviews. In fact, it was for the superintendent's position at Riverside County Office of Ed. It was a little awkward because both candidates were being interviewed by their board, and it was like, you know, question you, you know, and who did better at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is awkward.
Yeah. And it was a surprise decision, but yeah.
I'm fine trying to schedule a meeting in July. I would like to have more applicants.
Okay. So with that, I will see what I can do, because what I can ask Juliana to push this out on social media, maybe targeting specifically people in Orange County.
Parents and the student center.
Is there, I mean, I know we do the daily bulletin. And
The daily refreshment. It did get pushed out on
there. But not everybody reads that.
Exactly.
Now, are we contacting the sites in those areas and saying, can you put something on the bulletin board? Can you reach out to, you know?
No. So what does happen?
Staff, maybe not necessarily parents, but staff. And do you know anybody? Because, I mean, there's got to be.
So we assume and hope that our staff reads the daily refreshment. This is also posted on our website. It also has been put on our social media pages, but that's just, like, I think the first push, the first broadcast.
Right.
I don't think there's been any targeted marketing to a specific thing, and in this case it'd be Orange County. So I, after this meeting, can talk to Juliana and see about her pushing, you know, on our Orange County, our Facebook pages, you know, specifically for the Santa Ana Student Center site, things like that,
right,
trying to target more in the Orange County realm.
Yeah.
beyond that, I don't know. We just don't ever seem to have as much interest in our citrus.
It feels like it, I mean, it just definitely feels by itself in its own little world.
Yeah.
For sure.
So no matter what our efforts have been in the past, citrus has always been a smaller pool.
Yeah, and I'm frank, like, that's where I live. I'm just not nearly as willing to, like, recommend. Now, that makes me have, like, potentially, like, 3 or 4 or 5 friends of mine on that board, and I'm not going to be uncomfortable as well.
Understandably so. I'll ask you, though, to pull out those connections next year, because you know we will be losing Mike, Michael, and Lauren.
All 3 next year?
I think so. Pretty sure that they're all going to turn out.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, next year's going to be rough. Unless we do some kind of work amending bylaws or doing something like that.
We talked about staggering
right. terms because we did recognize that next year, not this upcoming school year, but the following year is going to be painful for a few of our boards, 2 or 3 of our boards that you guys oversee, just because of that same thing. People are going to term out. We're going to lose a lot of board. This upcoming school year is the last year for many of our board members, just the way it worked out. So it's going to be a tougher year unless we do something with, like I said, bylaws or terms or whatever.
Natalie,
yes.
Just out of curiosity, is there any way we could reach out to Charlene Pazio? Isn't she in that area? Could we ask her if she could maybe help spread the word?
Sure, we could.
Some connections or contacts she has?
Sure, I absolutely can. She in theory is aware of it because she's on the citrus board. So she knows that we just said goodbye to Sarah. But I didn't personally ask her, hey, you know, do you know of anybody that you'd recommend apply? But I would be happy to do that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if she was still on there.
She is. Yes, she is. And I could also do the exact same thing with Monica, the principal, and say, hey, do you have parents that you want to reach out to or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so I will, if you're in the room, I'll send you home with paper packets. Everybody, I will email it to you. That way you guys can choose if you want to review paper, if you want to review electronically. And then we'll just see if we can open it back up and maybe even just a couple. So our parents tend to not read anything from us over the summer. Like, they're done for the summer.
Yeah.
You know, so... Again, pushing out on social media is different, but us sending out another daily refreshment or
that's
any kind of push
staff,
like that. Yeah.
You know, would be okay.
Yeah. So can we take a look at your calendars and see if we can schedule something for July, interviews for July? I would say mid to late would give us enough time to, again, open the application window back up and, you know, solicit more input.
Wednesdays are too super tight for me.
Okay.
So Tuesday afternoons are usually
the best.
But yeah, the best.
Okay. With that in mind, there's the 20th or the 27th. Does anybody have conflicts or preferences?
I have a conflict on the 20th. Can we do the 27th?
27th is good for me.
It's fine with me.
I'm going
to swim. Okay. So I'm going to schedule that. The earliest I can do is 3. So do you guys prefer 3 or 4?
I prefer
4. 4? Okay. Is 4 o'clock good for everybody?
Okay. I think, yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to invite you all to a meeting and... we can talk about it as it gets closer, just like today, but it, usually for interviews, we try to do in person as we can, if we can, so, okay. And like we typically do, I will send out the applications, not just these, but any that come in between now and then, I'll send them out, and you guys can let me know your preferences individually so that we're not violating anything that way, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you, Kathy, for sticking through our whole meeting. Originally, we had you at the top of the agenda. Amy and Kathleen both needed to be closer to the top, and I thought, well, you know what? This will be good for you to see what a spring zinc bean looks like. So, Tim, I'll turn. I will turn it back over to you, Tim, and you can.
So are we recording this or not?
I don't care. How's that?
I always say inappropriate things, so I didn't want to be recording. So.
That's fine. So we're going to move into closed session at 4:16. Okay, we are back in open session at 4:24, and Tim Trainor's made a motion to appoint
Kathy Hansen as our board member here at Spring Zinc.
Thank you, and that was seconded by Beth. Okay, thank you. All right, all those in favor in the room?
Aye.
And online, Bert?
Aye.
And Ellard?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carried.
I got excited.
Oh, that's okay. That's quite all right. That's quite all right.
All right. Number 10, board comments.
I just want
not to mandatory.
Staff, administrators, everybody. I mean, this was a crazy year. And we made it.
Came into that.
And I know everybody put in, you know, we always, our staff always goes above and beyond, and this was just insane. But we made it through with flying colors. We managed to have graduation at the end.
That's right.
I mean, how do we pull that together? I was like, prom, we're having a prom.
I know, right?
Good job, guys.
Crazy.
I mean, they pulled together, and I just want to congratulate everybody for, you know, stepping up and doing what was best for the kids.
I will definitely make note of that. Thank you. Anybody else?
Not really.
I was just echo what Tifa said. Well said. So just congratulations and job well done for the entire year. I'm proud to be associated with the entire Springs Network.
Thank you.
Take a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Sounds good. Tim gave a motion.
I'm going to take it.
That's okay. I got a motion and a second out of it. We're good. Okay, so we are going to adjourn at 4:26. All those in favor?
Aye.
In the room, online, Bert?
Aye.
Ellard?
Aye.
All right. Thank you, guys. Motion carried, and you're adjourned. Thank you so much.